Welcome back to All of It. It's 2019, and somehow we are still talking about blackface. In our pitch meeting, we sort of jokingly said, hey, let's do a segment called Blackface for Dummies. But here's the deal. It's not a joke. And in reality, only a dummy would do blackface. That's not editorial, by the way. That's just fact. This conversation was reignited because a Virginia governor, that is as of 12/31 on February 13th, Ralph Northam, he's continuing to fight for his job after it was revealed in his medical school yearbook. There was a page featured, his page, with a man in blackface and another in a Klan hood. While he ultimately denied that he is either of the men in the photo, he admitted to wearing blackface on a separate occasion as part of a Michael Jackson costume. Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring also admitted to wearing blackface in college. The whole thing has a lot of people asking, what the what? While others are asking, are you really that surprised to see this in a state that was home to the capital of the Confederacy? A real head scratcher is the fact that Gucci had a sweater in its stores which it had to pull because it heavily resembled blackface. And singer Katy Perry pulled a pair of shoes that were, you get the idea. From students at the University of Oklahoma to Poly Prep here in New York, some seem to feel the need to do blackface. It seems that even in 2019, a whole lot of people still don't understand why it is so abhorrent. We think it is time for a history lesson. Joining us now is Dr. Michael Fauntroy, an associate professor of political science at Howard University, to walk us through the history of blackface in America, which means there will be some language, folks, some real talk language, just letting you know. Dr. Fauntroy, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. So let's go back to the very beginning. Many people associate blackface with the South, but that actually the practice began in New York and northern cities. Why?
Well, it appears that it started there because there were literally performers out there looking for ways to entertain people. And then, as now, mocking black people is a form of entertainment for some people. Shortly after that took place in New York, it began to move and make its way to the South. And that's where it just sort of exploded and became it rooted itself in our American identity and pervades itself even to this day.
Who were often the people performing in blackface?
Well, they were primarily minstrel performers, and they did so, again, because they're trying to figure out how to put together an act that can draw crowds. And so they hit on this blackface piece, which began before the Civil War, and it trafficked in some of the most racist and vile stereotypes that you could imagine. You know, black people are lazy, black people are dim-witted, black people are cowardly, black people are hypersexual. And what's notable, in my view, is that those stereotypes then are very much the way many people who don't have any real sustained contact with black people view black people now. And it speaks to the permanence of culture in embedding in certain people views about others that they don't know.
Do we know if there was any political aim to blackface?
Well, you know, I'm a political scientist, and I see almost everything in the context of politics. If you can literally dehumanize people, which is what blackface was initially doing, if you can dehumanize people and devalue people, then you can make it easier to keep people enslaved and to resist the abolitionist movement that was developing, which was saying, no, black people are human beings too and should be afforded the same rights as everyone else.
And some of the reading I did, and please correct me if I'm wrong, there were some poor whites were often doing blackface as a way to sort of separate themselves from black people.
Yeah, you know, one of the really interesting side notes in American history is while black people were enslaved and treated about as poorly as human beings can be treated, poor whites had only a slightly better existence in some respects. And for them to utilize blackface was sort of a way for them to make themselves feel better about their own situations, in that if at least I'm not black, at least I'm not them, and if I can engage in these same mockings that they're lazy, dim-witted, cowardly, and hypersexual, then I can elevate myself socially and perhaps even socioeconomically above this group of people.
My guest is Dr. Michael Fauntroy, Associate Professor of Political Science at Howard University. We're talking about the history of blackface. How did black entertainers ever use blackface?
Sadly, yes. And it's also partly a reflection of the reality of that time. As you can imagine, black entertainment and entertainers in that period did not have very many options. Some of them did utilize blackface as a way of sort of keeping busy, if you will, if a way to work, and they did what they could in the context in which they were operating, and it's a sad truth that they in by doing that helped to effectuate and perpetuate racial stereotypes.
How did blackface influence advertising?
Wow. Well, in a number of ways. But let me broaden that for just a moment, if you
sure.
don't mind. Because advertising is part of a larger sort of communication visual sphere. So as you get into the early 20th century, you see a number of American actors, people like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland and Shirley Temple, revered figures in American cinema, who use blackface in movies. All right, so if they use it in movies and it sells movies, then why wouldn't advertisers seek to use it to sell whatever product they thought it was appropriate to use? And so in that regard, blackface became a mechanism to sell products across a full range of examples.
So at what point, you mentioned Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland, at what point did people finally begin to say, this has no place in entertainment, in advertising, in culture?
You know, it's difficult to sort of put a finger on a particular period in time, but I think as you look at the civil rights movement of the 1960s, you know, while we often view it in the context of public policy, and rightfully so, it actually was an attempt to uproot the entire American system of racism. And that included the movement that we saw in the entertainment industry to reinforce many of these images. So it was also calling not just for changes in public policy, but changes in our cultural mores. And you began to see African Americans getting very limited, but in some respects, very significant roles in television and in movies. And at that point, people began to move away from blackface. Now, as we consider it in the context of what's going on with elected officials now, many of those elected officials are of an age in which they were at least culturally and politically socialized in a period in which blackface was still very much acceptable. But as you move forward with younger people, you see that that's just not acceptable anymore.
Some of the articles I've read noted that there was a bit of a resurgence of blackface in the 1980s. Do you understand why?
I have a theory about that. So Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, in his 1984 medical school yearbook, and by the way, I didn't even know medical schools had yearbooks, but 1984 is a really pivotal year. Ronald Reagan's running for re-election. There's the King Holiday Bill controversy. In November of 1984, the Free South Africa movement launches. Jesse Jackson's running for president in 1984. There are a lot of things happening in the country at around the same time. And that's also about when you saw the resurgence of blackface in some respects. And I think that was used as a sort of cultural pushback to some of the changes that were beginning to occur in America at that time.
I have to read you a text. My niece grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and she went to Dartmouth and got a degree in African American studies, and we've been texting about this. And this is what she texted me about Virginia. She said, "What a mess all around. Let me just say this. If we're saying Northam and the state AG need to resign for wearing blackface when they were in med school and college, respectively, which to be clear, they 100% should resign for wearing blackface, then I want to see the receipts for the rest of the state legislature. I'm positive that nearly all the white men in the VA state legislature have worn blackface at some point in time, and they've all got to go. We're cleaning house, y'all."
And well, let me give you a sort of personal anecdote, because in 1984, I started undergraduate school in Hampton University in Hampton, Virginia. Mm-hmm. I am very familiar with the Commonwealth, and I will tell you, she's 1,000% right, and it really does help to explain why there's been relative silence from the elected officials in the Commonwealth over this, because many of them know that if a yearbook picture gets out, or people or friends from college or wherever start to talk, then they're going to have problems too.
Yeah, she went on, "I want to see everyone's yearbooks because it was anarchy in the world of yearbooks back in the day. Maybe it's like a new requirement, maybe tax returns and yearbooks."
Yeah, so listen, the yearbooks are sort of memorialized racism, if you will, mm-hmm. and it serves as a time capsule of what is going on at a particular school at a particular time. I haven't seen Governor Northam's medical school yearbook, but I'm told by people who reporters in the area who've covered this story that there are pages all through the thing with of this kind of thing. And there's an irony that many of those folks are now practicing physicians, providing health care to people all over the Commonwealth and elsewhere. And it makes you wonder.
My guest is Dr. Michael Fauntroy, Associate Professor of Political Science at Howard University. It's interesting. A lot of the blackface we're seeing is, you know, kids getting dressed up for Halloween. There seems to be this issue that people somehow feel like Halloween is okay. A recent Pew Research poll found that 1/3 of Americans, or at least the ones asked this question in this poll, say blackface is okay if it's part of a Halloween costume. Can you explain why someone would think that's okay?
No. But
Why do you think people react that way?
I think because they don't understand the history of it and they don't take it seriously. You know, so I think that we have to remember that relatively young people have no historical context, all right? Mm-hmm. And so they don't get it. They don't understand it. And human beings have a tendency to not have a lot of regard for things they don't understand, all right? And so I can understand in that regard that they would think it's all right. But it's hard to explain to somebody, it's hard for somebody to hear the history of blackface and the fact that along with Ku Klux Klan hoods, Confederate flags, and Confederate monuments, in some respects represent some kind of visual terrorism for black people that's omnipresent all the time, that it's hard at that point for people to understand that and then say it's okay unless they just don't care. Perhaps that's what we have in some regard here.
Dr. Michael Fauntroy has been my guest. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at Howard University. Thank you, sir, for joining us today. We really appreciate your help.
My pleasure.